Harbingers of death. Ghosts that appear to the living just before someone's about to die. There appears to be various types of harbingers of death. Many aristocratic families seem to have them, including headless horsemen, phantom drummers, boughs of ancient oak trees that crash to the ground, and family members who come back to herald the imminent death of the head of the household. The Byron family from Newstead Abbey in Nottinghamshire are reputed to actually have their very own harbinger of death. A monk would always appear before a traumatic event or the death of one of the family. Origins of the monk are really not known at all, but their family seat was built on the ground that was once an abbey. There was actually a poem written by Lord Byron, and just a little bit of it. A monk arrayed in cowl and beads and dusky garb appeared, now in the moonlight and now lapsed in shade, with steps that trod as heavy yet unheard. Byron actually saw what he called the goblin friar before a calamity befell him in 1815, when he entered into a disastrous marriage with the heiress Anne Milbank. Byron was always fascinated by the supernatural and was indirectly responsible for both Frankenstein and Dracula when he was in Italy with Mary Shelley and his physician doctor, Dr. Polidori. He suggested that they each write a ghost story. He wrote a poem, Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein, and Dr. Polidori penned the very first vampire story, which later inspired no less than Bram Stoker. The Welsh have their own harbingers of death, the Carwellan Cirith, or corpse candle. These are candle-shaped flames that appear near to the house before death takes place. They say that it's possible to discern from the shape and colour of the corpse candle who is about to die. If a child is about to die, it will be a small flame, blue in colour. If a middle-aged person is to die, the person will be large and red. A large flame, white in colour, depicts an old person is about to die. The Irish, of course, have their very own banshee, which has its origins deep in mythology. That's Irish mythology. She wailed for many dying ancient heroes, including Brian Boru, Finn McCall, and King Conor MacNessa. She is a spirit that appears before a person's death to howl a moaning song and to welcome them into the afterlife. It's basically Ireland's most famous ghost. The correct pronunciation of this female spirit is Bianse, as she is said to associate herself with Irish families, particularly if their surname starts with the letter O, and she is more likely to be seen by a third daughter. Her appearance is said to be the portent of death for a family member, announced by crying and wailing during the hours of darkness. The sound is said to be like two cats fighting, only much worse. The tragic relative may be thousands of miles away in another country, and the wailing can apparently be heard for several nights in succession until the actual death occurs. The woman herself appears in contrasting ways. Sometimes she's described as a strange, smelling, small, ugly hag dressed in rags. At other times, she appears as a young and beautiful woman in a green dress, her eyes red and swollen from constant crying. A third type of banshee has also been reported, but it's not clear whether she's young or old, as she has no clear features, with holes where her eyes should be. The common factor linking all these three types is very long hair that streams out in the wind. Folklore dictates that when a banshee is disturbed by a mortal person, she will never appear again while that generation lives, but will return to haunt future generations. In 1922, General Michael Collins was killed in an ambush. He was commander of the Irish Free State Army during the Irish Civil War. Just before the ambush, the people in the little village of Sam's Cross said that they distinctly heard the wailing of a banshee. Since the 1840s, many Irish families emigrated to America, and it's claimed that their banshees actually travelled with them. In 1963, an Irish businessman with Irish ancestry who had heard the banshee before was on a trip to Canada. He was in bed reading the newspaper when he heard the dreadful wailing noise of the banshee. The time was just before noon on the 22nd of November, 1963. This harbinger of death was bemoaning the death of someone with Irish ancestry, no less than President John Kennedy. Probably the most famous harbinger of death, and particularly in England and the Isle of Man, is the black dog. By tradition, almost every wilderness has its supernatural inhabitant, from the devil, giants, ghosts, fairies, the wild hunt phantom, funerals and headless horsemen. In their heyday, such legends as these helped to reinforce established values or to sanction new ones. Early Christian priests often encouraged the legends of men being turned to stone on a Sunday, partly to keep their churches full and partly to discourage people from visiting pagan sites once linked with the old religion. These legends also had a practical function. Families living in remote parts of the country needed a deterrent to discourage their children from wandering alone into the moors and the hills. Before a police force, thieves, poachers, footpads, smugglers and pirates needed a deterrent to keep nosy folk and inquisitive kids away from their hoards and treasures. So they filled these lonely places with fearful creatures who roamed the hills and valleys, scratched children to death with their long claws, ate their flesh, drank their blood, and when the foul feast was over, hung their skins out to dry in their caves. Fortunately, the phantom funeral has gone to its final rest. The wild hunt has been banned. The headless horseman rides no more. And most folk realise that the devil was manufactured by the church. However, the black dog is still alive and kicking and is still very much with us. The traditional black dog is larger than life, about the size of a calf or donkey, has a shaggy coat, burning red or yellow saucer-shaped eyes, and sometimes drags rusty chains. It may be a ghost, a guardian, an omen, a witch's familiar, or a harbinger of death. Different parts of the country and communities have different names for them. East Anglia has Black Shuck, Yorkshire, Padfoot or Barguest, Lancashire, Trash or Scriker, and the Isle of Man, the Moddy Do. Devon has Yeth Hounds or Wish Hounds. They mostly abound in places that were once Viking settlements. Many stories abound about these supposedly mythological hellhounds. Very credible people are still seeing them to this very day. No less than Fabian of Scotland Yard, some of you may remember him, encountered a black dog when he was called in to investigate the gruesome murder of a Warwickshire farm worker, Charles Walton, who had been impaled on his own pitchfork. Scratched on the chest of the 74-year-old victim was the sign of the cross. While investigating the case, Fabian was walking along the main road in Lower Quinton when a large black dog ran across his path. He asked an approaching boy if the dog was his. Frightened to death, the lad ran away, leaving Detective Superintendent Fabian totally mystified. Later in the investigation, Fabian found the body of a large black Labrador hanging from a tree. That night, Fabian visited the local pub and got into conversation with some of the locals. On mentioning the dog, he was told that back in 1985, a young ploughboy had encountered a larger-than-life black dog 9 times in as many days. After his last encounter, his seemingly healthy sister died. The ploughboy was no less than the murder victim, Charles Walton. The strange case of Charles Walton remains unsolved to this very day. This summer I was in Skegness for a book signing when a lady came to me with an interesting story of her late husband. They lived in Whitby, and he worked in the early warning centre at Filingdale on the Yorkshire Moors. He always travelled to and from work on a motorbike, and he often worked late at night. He was travelling home across the moors when he saw what he believed to be a donkey in the road. He slowed down, and as he approached, he realised that it was a large, black, shaggy dog with pointed ears and red staring eyes. He accelerated and left the beast standing in the road. When he arrived home, he woke his wife to tell her what he had seen. They talked long into the night about his experience. The following week, her husband was killed by a runaway lorry on a hill in Whitby. She told me she had no objections whatsoever to me relating this story, as long as I didn't mention her name. Now, come on, guys. Would you really make up a story like that? No, neither would I. I also know a senior lecturer in psychology at the Centre of Anomalous Psychological Process at University College Northampton, who has a PhD in psychology, who had an encounter as a child. To quote Simon Sherwood, the year was about 1974. I had been in bed a couple of hours. I woke to hear a patter of feet. I looked up, thinking it was my dog, but to my terror, I saw a massive black animal, probably with horns, but perhaps ears, galloping along the landing towards my bedroom. I tried to scream, but found it impossible. The creature's eyes were bright yellow and as big as saucers. The animal got to my bedroom door and then vanished as quickly as it appeared. Simon's parents tried to reassure him by providing him with rational explanations, as most parents do. He was actually only 4 years old when he encountered that black dog. To this day, he still believes in what he saw that night. He is a rational, credible person, a lecturer in psychology, not at all the sort of person to make up silly ghost stories, something that many other folk have seen over the centuries. Something that at this moment in time, we cannot explain. A devil, a familiar, a guardian, an omen, a harbinger of death. Let's hope not. I know for a fact that Simon is still alive and well, and still lecturing in Northampton. A few years ago, I did a DVD all about the ghosts of Northern Ireland, and on that DVD, I actually went to a disused, derelict village, walked through the road, the centre of the road, down the centre of the village, and went into one of the cottages. Went in to tell the story of the Irish Banshee. This is a very sad and forlorn sight. I'm walking down what is now a completely deserted, covered over trackway or road, running through a tiny little village in Northern Ireland. These deserted villages can be found all over Northern Ireland and are probably, or were, neglected and left after the potato famines of 1840, when hundreds of thousands of Irish emigrated to America, Australia, and of course England. But this is still here, a lasting memory. The road is under here somewhere, and even the wall still here, and the little cottages, all that's left of them. Rather dilapidated now, deserted. All that's left are the memories. But this one down here, the bottom one, probably the best preserved of all. Remember, at night when they're gathered inside the cottages, this place is steeped in myths and legends. Imagine how they felt when night drew down and the wind was howling and they were inside their little cottages for the night. Let's go in and see if we can get any of that atmosphere inside that little place. And Well, I wonder how many folks once lived here. Here's the original, one of the original roof beams. Completely rotten now. But what this door is, this can tell, no one knows. Inside this incredible little cottage. How many people lived and died here in this little cottage? Over here, a window. Bricked up, of course, now. And round here, a doorway. With the original wood across the door, probably oak, bricked up, going through to another room. Just imagine, it's night time. There's an impending death in the family. Here they are, huddled round the peat fire. This is the chimney. Birds' nests inside now, but completely hollow. Mum, Dad, and the children, and Grandma, dying. And then they hear the distant wail of the banshee coming in from the sea mist as it gets closer and closer until eventually it's hovering above the roof of this cottage. It's a sign of death. The banshee was always female. It's part of Irish mythology and legends. But many, many people believe in it. It's a harbinger of death. It's always female. It's always transparent. It wears a white hooded cloak. And it hovers above the house or the cottage of someone that's about to die. Every Irish family has a banshee. Every Irish family with the name of O or Mac in front of it. But of course, in places like America and Australia, they've lost the O and the Mac. But the names, of course, are still there. Because many, many hundreds of thousands of Irish, of course, now live in America, Australia, New Zealand. Just imagine the fear of the people when that banshee was hovering above them. I, as a child, was terrified of ghosts, and still am to a certain extent. In fact, the hair on the back of my neck standing up as I talk. And probably the most frightening thing that ever happened to me was when I went to see a film by Walt Disney called Darby O'Gill and the Little People. And there was a village, not unlike this one, but inhabited, and hovering above the roof of the cottage was this hideous banshee. It frightened me so much that I don't think I slept for at least 4 nights. And all of a sudden, it all comes back to me. Quite frightening, to say the least. Whether I'll sleep tonight, I don't know. But the banshees don't just stay in this country, because if the family has emigrated, the banshee can, of course, go with the people that have emigrated. So if there's an impending death in the family, no matter where it is in the world, the banshee can travel. So just because you live abroad, don't think you're safe. Because you're not. She can follow you.